And good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining today, Brighteon TV. David Dubine here from Adapt 2030. We've seen our world slowly unravel with the disconnection of supply chains, the liquidation of finance and industry, constriction of crops, food prices rising. So what does 2023 hold for us? Because you can clearly see that it's a game plan and we're moving from point A to point B. So if you know where point B is, in the future, we can just trace our steps back as to what's the trajectory? Where are we going to move? What could you expect as we get into the next phase of plans for restructuring of society and moving us into digital currencies? Well, I got five different aspects here of things to look for in 2023. So the episode today would be 2023 awaits. Hope you can join me right after the break and throw some solutions toward us as well.
At the Brighteon store, we offer a variety of colloidal silver solutions that we make in Texas using Texas rainwater and specialized circuitry that I personally designed to produce silver ions in purified rainwater. We have a colloidal silver extra strength spray, a silver-based first aid gel, as well as a colloidal silver herbal mouthwash solution that people just rave about. Each one of these is subjected to our rigorous laboratory testing for metals, glyphosate, and microbiology in order to ensure product purity and safety for your health. We manufacture our own silver products right in the heart of Texas and deliver them to you using our own warehousing and fulfillment infrastructure that we built to serve real America. All of us here at Brighteon thank you for your support. Shop our silver products at brighteonstore.com.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrighteonStore.com.
The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping. You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in three layers: high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Judy Mikovits, and I just so appreciate Mike Adams and Brighteon TV and giving us a voice back as he's provided us the opportunity to talk. We're coming here from Mannheim, Pennsylvania, in the Clay Clark Reawaken America. So thank you, Brighteon TV, and Mike, appreciate you.
Riots, recession, food prices, gas prices, violation of our liberties. These issues are keeping Americans awake at night. Sleepless nights aren't good for your health. Millions are suffering from sleep gap disorder. I'm Dr. Steve Hodson, and I have a natural solution to overcome this dreaded sleep gap disorder, my proprietary sleep formula. One capsule of sleep formula will help you achieve a great night's sleep for as little as 75 cents per night. Visit our website, physicianspreferencevitamins.com, and enter the promo code SLEEPNOW. It's hard to stand up against tyranny when you're tired. Pray for our country and get a good night's sleep.
And thank you for joining me for this most important conversation, because we're all in this together. like the change of the world that we're seeing right now is affecting everyone. So all of us combined with solutions can find our way out of this or survive through it in a manner which would continue to allow us to have abundant lifestyles and live in luxury instead of going back to serfdom and sleeping with the pigs in the back of the barn on some straw. Not a fan, don't want to go there. 0% chance I'm going there, and I don't want any of you going in that direction either. So if we can share some of the data points today, perhaps this will help you allow your families to get more prepared in your communities, start those conversations with people about starting to work together. It will be a community effort. There will be no lone wolves that will move through this. So how do you explain it to somebody else? Well, it's going to require some fact to at least explain the problem first. I know, I hear this all the time. Oh, you're too negative. I don't want to hear about that. Oh, it'll get better. It'll this, it'll X, Y, Z. Well, just framing it a little bit differently. Hey, did you hear about the Tonga eruption? Hey, did you hear about these extreme weather events? So I want to run through a few data points. And as you can see on the beginning here, this is Ulamaru, or otherwise known as Ayers Rock. So down in New South Wales, they've had the largest floods in the last 1,000 years, 3 times in 3 storms. It's decimated and ruined probably 95 to 98% of the wheat crop coming out of New South Wales. So this was an artist rendition of the floods that were in the desert moving and water bodies filling back up into massive lakes and estuaries. So the bird populations, the fish populations, desert-wise, riverbound, is going to explode. So if nature does throw something in destruction in one fashion, you could look to nature to provide bounty in another one. So yeah, the wheat is sprouting on the heads standing in the field because, well, it's too wet. And look at the deserts now blooming and turning into wildlife paradise, verdant milk and honey, grasslands, things are coming back. So the ultimate wild card in everything you're seeing, if you frame the reference of looking at all these changes in terms of food supply and cycles repeating, how will the food supply be affected most? Now, we could talk about climate change all day long, 100-year projections, but what we have in play is the Tonga eruption. Now, you may have seen the prior programs that are done exclusively on Tonga, the eruption, the density of ash and water vapor, and the height that it reached in the atmosphere. It's the largest eruption in 200 years. So what we're looking at here is the ultimate fallout. The thing was with the ash and the sulfur dioxide, it wasn't at levels that we saw on land-based eruptions. This was a water vapor event. So as we look through the timeline on this, we're approaching the 1-year mark. As we come into January 15th, we'll be at the 1-year mark. So based on Pinatubo's eruption profile, coming up to the 1-year mark, we should be getting near maximum effects of cooling in the atmosphere. And that should drag on for approximately 3 months, and then we'll come to the ultimate cooling at that point. Now that will run for a full year, and then we should start to exit out of, and the water vapor and particulates in the atmosphere should start to thin, and temperature should return back to normal again, meaning crop production, planting and harvesting dates will be returned back to, we can get food again. But for right now, these next 2 years, we are heading into a year without a summer, absolutely. And this is the reason that a lot of things you're seeing right now. So look at it in different optics. Now, since the programs that I've done here on Brighteon TV on the live broadcast here, 2 to 3 p.m. every Friday on the Adapt 2030 show, this chart that I'm showing you here was not available. And the scary thing is they're only releasing July data now, but what month are we in? We're in December. That's 5 months delay. What is the problem with the readings of water vapor and changes of pressure in the atmosphere and Kelvin temperature drop? Now, degrees Kelvin is very similar to degrees Celsius or degrees Fahrenheit. It's a measurement off of a baseline, and it's similar to Celsius, up 10, down 10. And we are looking at closer to 10 degree Fahrenheit drop across anywhere in blue you see in the Southern Hemisphere. Well, that was all the ash that got circulated in the cloud cells down after the eruption and water vapor down into the Southern Pole. Well, do you think that's going to affect crop production through the southern part of South America? It's brushing Australia, and they're getting these once in a thousand year storms and really unbelievably cold temperatures heading into summer. But think about your summer temperature average. If it was 10 or 12 degrees Fahrenheit below the normal, weather systems would be off. They'd be colliding, a lot more rainfall. Things just wouldn't sync up. Now, another gem here I was able to find, once I knew what I was looking for, in the pressure readings. Then I moved over to 30 millibar here, and thank you, Severe Weather EU, for putting this chart out. This one here shows similarly to what was shown in the last chart, but you get very specific on where the cooling is start to pronounce itself and bend out of that constricted zone in the southern hemisphere. This is going to start moving back northward again up into the zones growing wheat, corn, soy, barley, sorghum in the southern hemisphere. So as we march forward, if you've seen any of the planting data, oh my, it is looking traumatic at best and complete loss at worst. So this is the New Zealand temperature delta from just the beginning of December here. What do you see going into summer? See, this is the most important thing. They're not going into winter, they're going into summer. Meteorological summer, heat summer, what we would consider late June into July in the Northern Hemisphere temperatures is where they should be right now heading into their summer. But how much of a drop? That's over 2 degrees Celsius drop. And if you know anything about crop production, 2 degrees Celsius is what caused widespread famines in 1816 across Europe. And anything at minus 3 degrees Celsius was a no-grow. So just temperature comparisons from 1816 after the Tambor eruption in 1815, and now we're starting to see the exact same temperature profiles and drops in temperature that we see in this Tonga eruption a year after, coming into 2023. So the parallels are so stark, and they're actually frightening once you start to look into the data. So now we see it in Australia. We see it in New Zealand. Where else are we going to see it? Oh, let's look in Argentina. Start to see the drops in temperature on the Brazilian border there. Also with Uruguay, which I featured in the last video here on Brighton TV, went through a whole bunch of temperature variations and where it's cooling most in the northeast quadrant of Uruguay, which would match up with that same quadrant there at around 30 south. Those two borders connect, Uruguay and Argentina. Now also you'll see Argentina has reduced its wheat exports, just can't grow. So Brazil's out on the market looking for an extra 1.5 million tons of wheat, which Argentina would have supplied. But because of adverse growing conditions in the third La Nina, they're restricting exports because they need to feed their own people. Which kind of you get into this balance here of where will the civil unrest strike first on the planet based on where the food production will cease first? That's a local. But then you need to also look at those same countries that would be importing foods. Well, where are they getting their imports from? If they're getting it from Argentina on the wheat side, they're not getting it because their next door neighbor and their biggest trading partner in Mercosur, Brazil and Argentina, they can't even get the grains out of the next door neighbor. So what do you think somebody in Africa that's buying, do you think they're going to get their share? No, not a chance. Then they'll look up at other places like Ukraine. Oh, wait, sorry, that's not online either. 30% reduction of all grain production in Europe this year. Look at American production, down 20%. So everywhere you look across the planet, you're starting to see reductions. So these other smaller countries that rely, you know, heavily on imports, they're going to be the first places to rattle. Opportunity there for you if you are an investor in an emerging market and you want to get full value out of your investment, when's your exit point before the fiat collapses? This is another thing to think about that's intertwined into all of this. The civil unrest and the effect on the local economy and the valuation of the fiat in that nation and investments tied to that fiat, all based on this more elephant in the room, if you will. So let's look at Brazil. And we got Paraguay there and Argentina also. So the June, July, August of 2022 is on the left. It's a temperature profile, 3 month overlaid sandwich. So what do we see? I see an emerging top right. You look in Parana State there. And if you go down to the left or west, you'll start to see cooling and Reru, Acre. So what happens there? This is all of South America. So now we're starting to see effects in Peru as well. Which means for me, just on a forecasting trend basis, these areas are going to expand in cooling. Before it wasn't Peru, now it is. Before it was not Brazil North, now it is. Some of these temperature spots where I can try to draw data from, Colombia, on the top right, this is November 20th to 26th. You're starting to see some cooling form up in Colombia. But when you go up there to look into their meteorological bureau, they rely on the United States for their data. So it's not all encompassing where you can get solid quality data points throughout every single nation, because right now I'm mapping all of this and overlaying where the crops are grown in these regions and then subtracting that from global totals and coming out with an end number, and also forecasting on a trend basis where the cooling will continue. So if you want to look out another 12 months, you already know where it's going to amplify at. Top right, that expansion. Notice how the expansion is gradual from June, July, August, then we got September, and now we got into November. And you can see this is in the Southern Hemisphere. They're going into summer, so it should not be cooling in these areas. But when we head into winter, where will it cool most? So the winter and summer variance as well are two things that you need to take into account. Just because it's cooling in the summertime in these regions in northern Brazil, does it mean it'll cool there in the winter also, where it'll be an inverse where wind patterns will change and it'll warm in that area and cool somewhere else? This is kind of the unknown right now, but you know, trying to keep up with 45 different countries on a monthly basis or weekly takes a little bit of time and effort. So I hope you can try to crunch some of the data yourself, at least, you know where to go to look and try to piece some of this together if you are going to do some of your own research. Food production is another main thing to think about at the same time. Okay, these temperature deltas, yeah, it's cooling here, it's cooling there, it's cooling everywhere. Southern Hemisphere. Now, the information I have shows that this water vapor cloud has definitely transited over to at least 40 degrees north latitude now, way up north. So we shall see some cooling happening in the Northern Hemisphere, delayed by about 6 months, but will affect our 2023 crop growing zones. And if we do look back in the year 1816, 1 year after, food production was knocked out at the knees in Vermont, New Hampshire, and New York. It snowed at the end of June in New York, like a foot. Crop production was not forthcoming. They had famines across Europe. But we're one season delayed in the planting from the actual eruption. The eruption happened in the Southern Hemisphere, and they're going into the planting right now. So all accounts across most of those nations, they are not putting it in the fields at the moment. When they should have, months, plural, ago, or even a month ago, late planting would have been 2 weeks, and they're going to have to jack that thing with an enormous amount of potash to get it to grow. What do we see here? Indian farmers boosting their production of wheat. Now, why would they do that? They're already the second largest wheat and exporter on the planet, plus production-wise. They account for 14% of all wheat grown on the planet. But on an acreage basis, the internal consumption takes a lion's share of that. They're expanding their wheat fields 25%. That's what this is showing you here. The farmers in India, second largest wheat grower, they're going to expand up to 25% to grow more food. They understand what's happening also. They understand that the exports that they normally would be able to give to the world, they're going to have to keep it internal. There's going to be a massive push for going to arable lands that were not normally put in use, put into use immediately. Now, they're going to have to do some seasoning. They're probably going to have to, you know, do some work on that. Machinery will need to be brought in to flatten areas, till it, plant it. Irrigation is a whole other thing to think about, but if you do it in the right season and the monsoon's onsetting, then that takes care of itself. But look for an enormous push, if I'm anywhere remotely correct to this crop losses that are happening in the Southern Hemisphere, look for arable lands that are what they consider marginal, non-prime, to be put into 100% full production. Because the thinking is, some production is better than no production. Because if I can get a yield that's even half of the prime lands, like for example, corn, supposedly USDA forecast 187 bushels to 193 bushels per acre in prime land in, say, Iowa. But if you're going to take some of this marginal land and I'm still going to get 90 bushels per acre, and there's some gain in there versus fuel, fertilizers, field maintenance, and preparation, upkeep, etc. If there's a gain of even 10 bushels in there, you're going to watch people flock to it because some is better than none. And when we go into this global famine, he who grows food or she who grows food, you're going to be growing money. They say there is no money tree, but au contraire, there will be. It's called the grains. This is where we're heading in 2023. So put that in perspective. Now, would you buy storable foods? That's a no-brainer. I mean, those things are good for 30 years. If you have the actual physical available cash, if I had $5 million extra dollars, I would buy a warehouse full of food, 30-year storable foods, and just stock it away. The electrical costs on, you know, warehousing some of these things, okay. But that is a no-brainer if you actually have the money and you are liquid cash to be able to buy a physical product that could be traded or sold at a higher price than another day. Storable foods, just good for 30 years. We're going to ride through this and, oh, it's going to get nasty in 2024. It's going to get pretty nasty in 23 here. So what is it with the increases that India is seeing that they're so in a panic phase to get every square inch of arable land under production that they're not telling the rest of the world about? And plus, you know, they ceased their wheat exports except some friendly nations that they were dealing with already, like emergency supplies down to Sri Lanka, for example, who went to 100% organic agriculture. And see, that's the canary in the coal mine right there. Moving to 100% organic ag with no like tapering in phase, that's just dangerous. But that's what a lot of nations are gonna do instantly because they can't get access to chemical fertilizers, which is gonna drive down production even further, where there's gonna go some places that are gonna go offline into massive losses, just like Sri Lanka, because they just couldn't get the fertilizer. So like, we're just gonna wing it with some cow dung. Okay. You just lost 50 or 60% of your yield. People are not expecting this. It's gonna blindside, I mean, absolutely blindside our planet what's going on right now. And this one here, these are the top three global producers of each staple crop. This is really a nice piece of information if you're gonna use it to explain somebody. Top Brazil, you know, got China, US, India, Russia, Bangladesh. So, you know, staying on the form of India, they got 14.1% of the wheat production slash exports of the planet. And they're in a panic to get more in the ground. So where does that leave places like the United States? There's not much arable land. We're gonna go to subprime or, you know, marginal at best, and they're still gonna try to put it in production. I spoke at that ag conference back in October. One of the points talked about there was taking marginal lands and turning them into productive lands on a cost basis. On your overage output, is it worth the time and money on a global market? Maybe. Taking 10 extra acres to put it into production? Not really. 100,000 extra marginal acres, if you could buy it and if you can get the leases on it, would be worth the time and effort. Provided they're close, they're connected, and they're in a regional area, and you could get the exclusive lease or buy out everybody else's leases on the marginal lands and put them under one control mechanism. That way, distribution of fertilizers and machinery for harvesting and tilling would all be under, you know, centralized one person making a plan out for the entire zone that would be marginal land buffer zones that are going to be put in production. So it's happening everywhere. And at the same time, you know, looking at China, these massive cold fronts that have been ripping through up there, their food production, it was already wiped out by the massive droughts, and then it was floods, and then it was droughts, and now it's cold. Perhaps it's a lockdown. You know, I wanted to say one last thing here before we go on the break. This whole China thing was kind of quirky to me anyway, the way they were with the zero policy COVID thing. But look at it through a different lens. Look at it through the food shortage lens. They locked down 100 million people in those little cubicles, and they reduced their diet from 2,500 or 3,000 calories a day to $1,200 or 1,200 calories a day delivered to them. So they just knocked out a huge amount of extra calories that could then be moved around the rest of the country. So you know, you're looking at it, is it a forced calorie reduction or is it really a zero COVID policy? And they had to pay their own dollars to stay in there. That was the whole thing, is once you got sent to a quarantine camp in China, you had to pay for it yourself. So it's like you got locked in a box and they rationed your food. And the excuse was the COVID. I'm just saying, now it's a mind experiment, because you got to look at it. During the lockdowns of the COVID initially, what stopped first? All the places you waste food. 40% of all food prepared at a university, at a convention center, at a restaurant, thrown away. Now, restaurants were doing a little bit better with their management on trying to reuse different offcuts to make different dishes, etc. I get it. But in a general food and bev on a concession or, you know, conferences and these sort of things, food was wasted everywhere. So if you were to cut out that food wastage area, okay, they did. They cut it out completely. And then now you start to put people away and ration their diets. Okay, that makes sense too. So we're really coming into it. But what about energy for the rest of the year coming into 2023 also? They have grandiose plans to waste our soybean crop in the United States into renewable ag diesel, renewable diesel. So we'll take a look at that right after the break here. What's pronounced or what's ongoing, or how are they going to even meet these targets? I look at this and say that's an impossibility. Like, they're currently under construction with broken supply chains, nothing working, base metals things shut down everywhere, and they're expected to go like 7x increase in terms of production for ag biodiesel and renewable diesel, wasting our food supply, going into food shortages. And that's the plan? It's already bad enough with ethanol. This renewable diesel, by the way, they want to use soybean oil. But not enough acreage in America, so something has to get cut. Is it going to be the corn to put out more soy acres? That's the plan. But we need to eat, so that means it's got to be a reduction in people. We'll discuss this right after the break. David Dubine, right here on TV, Adapt 2030. We'll be right back after the break.
Riots, recession, food prices, gas prices, violation of our liberties. These issues are keeping Americans awake at night. Sleepless nights aren't good for your health. Millions are suffering from sleep gap disorder. I'm Dr. Steve Hodgson, and I have a natural solution to overcome this dreaded sleep gap disorder, my proprietary sleep formula. One capsule of sleep formula will help you achieve a great night's sleep for as little as 75 cents per night. Visit our website, physicianspreferencevitamins.com, and enter the promo code SLEEPNOW. It's hard to stand up against tyranny when you're tired. Pray for our country and get a good night's sleep.
This was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now, post your videos today, and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com. Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrighteonStore.com.
Hey Hey, and welcome back. Brighteon TV Uncensored, David Dubine, Adapt 2030. Forecasting out for just trends, general trends for 2023. You can get more granular on data. So just coming into the break, I ran out of time on this last slide here, but I wanted to frame it for this next, you know, segment of the show here. Projections versus real world don't work anymore. Like, there's things that we're starting to find out that projections and real world disconnected back in 2020 or 2021. So mechanisms that we used to use when supply chains were fully functional, you were going to have to start thinking and forecasting in a different manner. Because this is a perfect case in point here. They would have you believe, the EIA, that somehow in the United States, we are going to construct multiple other biodiesel refineries and ethanol production facilities. And what we see right now, I can't even get a part for my heat pump because the supply chains from China have broken. And they're expecting us to come out with milled steel products and everything else from A to Z. It was difficult enough and would take 5 to 7 years to put one of these plants out at the best of times with fully functional supply chains. But look at this, they want to run this up from 22 to 24 and they're like, oh, wait a second. They're going to try to bring all this online in 2 years. That's nearly a 7x increase if you take it from the baseline where it is at existing capacity at 50 plus the plan plus the under construction. Look at these impossibilities. And the same thing with the forecasting. I was looking at the WASDA, that's the World USDA grain forecast and whatnot today earlier on the November. And I'm looking at that saying their projections out for 2023 are nearly identical to what it is now, not taking into consideration anything volcanic aerosol related for the Southern Hemisphere. It's just baffling. Like, this is so in your face right now. I cannot believe it's not one of the more talked about world events, because they're talking about scraping an enormous amount of food supply, soybean oil for this ag diesel or the renewable diesel. But here, the EPA just finalized using canola seed or rapeseed oil for new biodiesel oils. Because so here's the thing, people like me were saying, yo, you can't take our soybean crop and crush it and put it into gas tanks when a lot of people need that for animal feed or they need to eat it as a food staple, exports. What about the corn? I know it's dent corn, it's GMO, but there are an enormous amount of acres that could provide better nutrition for us that are put into ethanol production. Now, there's only a certain amount of acres in the United States or in Canada that's already been utilized, pretty much the best lands. Now we're going to play this, switcheroo game here as the year without a summer commences on our growth seasons. They'll already have been whacked at the knees in the Southern Hemisphere with their production. So they'll figure it out pretty quickly where things are growing or not. And if it comes around year number two, the world as you understand it will actually cease to function in the way that things are interconnected at the moment. They're going to disconnect into continental basis. And we're going to see that everywhere across the planet. That's why I keep talking about these fiat currencies. They're linked to a global system right now. They're going to de-link and they're going to come into a central bank digital currency system, which allow you to buy, sell, trade your canola, renewable fuel standard diesel. Oh, but you can only exit the city twice a month. Okay. So we're looking at these kind of prices already. This is for, right around the Thanksgiving time. Luckily, we got a break here. $209 for that 4 kilogram, which is approximately 8 pounds. That's in northeastern Canada in the Maritimes. Look at these prices, $204 for some steaks. Really, come on, man. Meat, that it's getting a little ridiculous. But if it goes to these prices globally, you have to realize what would the repercussions be. And we are on a slow train, soon to be heading downhill with gravity toward these prices. And of course, there always has to be some sort of solution. Now, don't worry about it. We're the government. We got it under control. Don't worry. Just go back to your Netflix and whatever. We'll take care of it for you. You don't even have to do anything. Just wait. Somebody else will do it for you. So then they have lab-grown meats. Now, you've heard about lab-grown meat because I was just talking about beef. But USDA just approved lab-grown chicken. Yummy. The menu's expanding. Lab-grown chicken next. Lab-grown beef. I wonder if they'll have lab-grown crickets eventually. Who knows? But the USDA is now moving toward lab-grown pork. So you can see, if we can't produce it on the farm, they're going to try to replicate it using cells in a petri dish. But my whole thing is, where's the initial inputs coming? If you're going to try to bring it to the volumes of meat consumed on the planet today, there just isn't enough inputs in their raw form, except the animal. The tech doesn't exist. The processing facilities are not even remotely, like one, maybe 1/5 of 1/8 of 1/1000th of 1% of what it would need to go to full production to feed the planet that way we that consume proteins right now. Another fanciful. Yeah, okay. I would imagine even at the run at the end of the famines and everything, there would be way less than 1% of lab-grown meats will still be even viable in 26 or 2027. It's a distract look left thing. Look right, look straight up, look at the stars, don't look here. And then we come into these self-inflicted wounds that I'm baffled, you know, I just closed my eyes, how people can't see through this. It's going to take a nation to stand up together to support farmers like this and just say, you know what, this affects all of us. We all eat. My children eat, my grandmother eats, I eat, my wife eats, my husband eats, whatever. Because what they're doing now is restricting fertilizer usage in Germany. So they're looking at a 40% decline in German production next year. Or is it a convenient excuse to explain away the year without a summer cooling that would limit crop production 40, 50, 60% anyway? You know, I balance a few of these things in my head when I'm looking through it, because I have all these data points from past historical events and what we see in real play time now. And my look at lens is, how will governments distract from this or explain away the events? Reframe it and look at it in that direction. So how would they explain away a 40% loss of German agriculture? You can't without raising an enormous amount of, how'd that happen? Let's investigate further. And then there's a lot more questions and a lot more things released than possibly they would want to have that conversation out in the open. But look at it now. Okay, Germany lost 40%. France will be down 40%. Netherlands, look what's happening over there. They're closing all the farms. Oh, it'll explain away the reduction of agricultural production, which means less food, which means higher prices, less food. Don't look at the eruption. Do not look at that year without a summer thing. We have an excuse for everything blanket cross to explain away why your foods are disappearing. Factory fires, okay. Self-inflicted wounds of closing down energy facilities that produce then our chemicals that then give us the fertilizers. So now they got a double whammy excuse. It's the fertilizer production. Oh, it was those bad Russians. Oh, it was the bad natural gas. We couldn't get the inputs. Oh, and we got energy rationing and energy shortages, so we couldn't run the plants to produce the fertilizer. That's why Germany's going to cut 40%, and that's why they're not going to have an additional 40% of your corn, wheat, and other crops, sorghum, millet, that they normally grow. But get used to it. Buckwheat is not your friend. Can't get it either. Poland can have shortages. Where does that leave us? They're trying to explain away every food shortage across the planet as natural means when it's all linked to the same event. And it's quirky that it's coming up in the same exact overlapping time frame of the intensity onset of these grand solar minimum cycle. So then we come into the energy shortages. So where do you expect energy shortages to be? Again, it's a general trend. Forecast it out. This will be an explanation as to even less fertilizer production across Europe, which will lead to greater shortages in other countries because they don't have the fertilizer. Now, if you can wind this back into, you don't want to tell a general populace that we just had a volcanic eruption that's the biggest in 200 years. Oh, by the way, that cycle was forecastable 20 years ago. And the onset of these events is an electrical discharge on our planet's crust, which creates more volcanism. Gee. Then you're talking about electrogravitics and different coupled electromagnetic fields. Wait, the sun drives our climate on the planet? They're interconnected electrically? No way. Yes way. Forecastable. And with the volcanic eruptions, which always accompany these cycles, you would expect to have a VEI 6 or 7 eruption that would impact and dent food production. But to tell the populace they would have stopped investing, they wouldn't obey the rule of law, I know there have been a lot of problems with that. But here, Switzerland facing unprecedented power shortages. They're even contemplating bans on electric vehicles. All right, now we know that's a charlatan show is the best explanation for this green agenda, Green New Deal. Copper, super common. It will take 200 years at the present, and that was actually in 2019, functional supply chains, 200 years to mine all the copper that's needed to go to the complete transition to renewable power. That's just the copper. That doesn't count any rare earth minerals, which would take up to 9,000 years for the galenium to mine out. So even at the best of the most common, it's fanciful at best. Now here's something, Germany Power Destiny. I want to stay with Germany here because I can also predict an economic collapse coming up in January in Germany because they went to the renewables. I know they've turned back on a few of their thermal plants, but if you look at the general trend, left side on this chart here is the combined power generation of Germany. Now, when you look over to the middle of December into January 2019 and the same replicated declines in 2020, where do they drop off? The solar drops out, which reduces their overall production right around the middle of the month, which we're coming into until the end of February. So you could see that they just literally won't have enough power based on their needs and their production levels at the moment. Some of these things are quite easy to see, and then they'll have an explanation as to why. But if this is Denmark, UK, and France combined, you'll see the same power dropout profile coming around, say, late December, January, February. The production levels drop out because their solar is not there. And this year's wind is off a little bit. Supply chains are constricted. Look at natural gas, that light blue, subtract that out of there this year too. So, you know, we're coming into other variables that won't exist, but we can overlap and now subtract that. There's going to be a massive, massive power deficit coming up at peak season, especially if it's cooler, which is forecast to be from now, middle of December, all the way through middle of February, late January. It's going to be an absolute economic collapse. For months, it's going to lock up in Europe. Oh, wait, that could be a possible catalyst for a worldwide financial collapse, bringing in central bank digital currencies. They need it. That's the plan. We're going there some way, shape, or form, being drugged across the broken glass on the ground. You're going to get drugged there whether you want to or not. What is the mechanism that has to be all-encompassing? It's going to be food shortages and an economic collapse. The food shortages will be alleviated by a digital rationing card. But I'm sorry, you can't have the digital rationing card until we get this new system of central bank digital currency on the blockchain to make sure there's no fraud, immutable, non-changeable, and we can do it in real time to understand where the food supply is. We care about you so much. We want to understand where every calorie of food is in the supply chain in real time. Just because we care, we want to make sure you get your calories so your kids don't starve. Provided you use the new central bank programmable money that we can erase at any time if you don't get to the narratives. But some way they're going to get you there, and they're going to be a combined. It's going to combine food and economic collapse. Not going to be one. It's going to be both at the same time. So how close are we? I'm not sure exactly. I won't forecast that direct into that month. France, National Electric Grid Chief says energy shortage, rationing likely this winter. Okay, France, the economy. Okay, German economy going to go, France's economy also heading. The UK, we know we were talking about energy rationing there too. So everybody look across the Eurozone, they're rationing everything. There's no possible way that that economy can function in any way, shape, or form as it did prior. None. If you delude yourself, put your head in the sand. I'll take your resources because somebody else can use them that actually has common sense. Down here in South Africa, they've already run out of fuel, so they're looking for emergency funding to try to get the diesel. And this is their power provider, Exxon. It's happening everywhere on the planet you look at. So I like this little meme here. Memes are fun. Don't mind us. We're just burning hundreds of gallons of jet fuel, running a helicopter to de-ice the clean energy wind turbines that aren't spinning or generating electricity because they shut down in cold and Arctic temperatures. Oh, by the way, are we heading into Arctic temperatures in the coldest part of the year in Germany and the Eurozone? Yes, we are. These don't function very well, nor does the solar, and they're out of natural gas, which brings us to the economy. Venezuela. They're making street puppets and sellable things for tourists out of their currency. Now, see, I would have loved to got one of those in Zimbabwe with a $100 billion note because, you know, those notes are quite collectible now. But it's gone from the point of being Venezuela oil rich, one of the most prosperous nations on the planet, to making tourist vendor sellables out of the former currency. This is going to happen globally. So bring it. How do you know there's signals and signs out there? Well, CBDCs are going to be brought in. Nigeria, they're limiting the ATM, like physical cash withdrawals, so you move over to the digital system. You're being forced. Now, $45 a day now, it might go down to $10 a day or something. But you see, they're barely giving you the second choice. Like $45 a day, who can operate on 45 bucks a day? Moving you into the new digital system. And then BlackRock says, get ready for a recession / depression unlike any other. And they're talking thousands of years. If you read into the article, they go back to the Roman era, which it would make sense to have a collapse of that proportion. So Aladdin and their forecasting software is talking the largest crash in human history happening beginning now in December, rolling through the rest of the year in through 2023. And this is, I think, somewhere that the central bank digital issuance will come out. And the same thing that I was saying earlier is they've pegged on some of the same research that the way we used to forecast and do modeling won't work any longer. Everything's so broken and discombobulated and disconnected now that old systems, the way that it used to forecast out economic activity or whatnot, growth of plants, movement of grains across planet, it just doesn't work anymore because it's so, like I say, a broken fashion of itself. So it just doesn't fit. It's like square peg, round hole now. But you can start to see the signs are all around us. And central banks, they're jumping back on gold too. If you look at that V recovery there, they're piling on the gold. But again, you need it with a new gold-backed currency. So I had word from a friend of mine who lives over in Cyprus, was telling me that they're are hearing rumors of they're going to issue 1,000 notes of the new denomination of the gold-backed currency, this BRICS currency for a better term. They're going to do 500 notes and 1,000 notes. And you're going to be able to take that example, 1,000 BRIC note, and put it on the counter of participating banks and get a piece of physical gold back over the counter. This is the direction they're taking it, just like America was pre-1933. They need to accumulate the gold to get the faith in the currency to start, because I want that gold, especially if it's going to be backed with oil and grains and the largest grain producers on the planet. You got the food, the energy, and the solid metals, and I'm sure silver will be included in that too. But see, that's the kind of currency I would say, yes, that seems very stable and very safe. I want those notes compared to a US dollar where they printed umpteen and exposed to, 70, 80 trillion in derivatives just in America. That little green piece of paper will eventually become a street vendor item for sale, made little pretty peacocks or phoenixes or whatever those were there. And the bullion boom, if you follow along with the average person who's becoming more aware, a $2,000 piece of gold is a little out of the range versus 2 or 3 ounces of silver, 50 bucks, 100 bucks. I'll take 4 ounces of silver, 5 ounces, depending on premiums. But what they're finding is the trickle in of the individual buying 1, 5, 10 ounce bars is starting to drain the system. Like the COMEX, they're starting to run out of silver. They will be totally out of warehouseable silver somewhere in March of this year if the trend continues. Of 2023, excuse me. I'm still thinking into the next 2 weeks here. Happy New Year. So the thing that's really setting it off when we come into 2024, and I think the elites kind of understand this, the cosmic changes, the spiritual changes we're experiencing, the cognitive changes. This Uranus, Neptune, Saturn, Pluto, or Uranus, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, excuse me, are going to start looping in and creating their own second magnetic field. Now that is going to be a toroid loop, and then we have the sun and then the earth in the center of that. And that's in October of 2024. So the massive earth changes inbound that we're about to see in a second looping magnetic field are an intensity of discharge of volcanic eruption and larger earthquakes. There should be an uptick January, February, March when we get locked into this magnetic window, for a better term. Look for an increase in volcanoes for sure. You're going to start to see a lot more magmatic eruptions, such as this one here in Hawaii. And Kilauea and Mauna Loa are both erupting at the same time right now. These types of eruptive events are going to continue. I'm really looking for a very large VEI 6 or 7 to combine with then the Tonga eruption. And if we get that, it'll be a runaway year without a summer. It'll take 5 years to come back. Population would plummet on the planet. If you see that, you need to run immediately and buy a greenhouse and grow lights. So this is the flooding that was in Pakistan. If you think about it, if this was previously a lake bed area where there was some crustal deformation where this would have then pushed back, you could see why it was a cradle of civilization. Now these areas are starting to refill again. The amount of flooding coming down in different parts of the world is astounding, and it's going to get more astounding. The Bible talks about hailstones the size of, you know, 20-pound rocks and bowling balls in today's terms. Jeddah over in Saudi Arabia, 3 years worth of rain in 6 hours. And these are the types of storms that are upticking. You know, this is Saudi Arabia flooding tremendously. And it seems the new benchmark that we've reached is 1 inch per hour is the extreme storm rate. Death Valley filled up, 8 hours, 8 inches of rain. Italy, 6 inches of rain in 6 hours, massive flooding. So we're going to see all these things in tandem roll together, including the electrical activity above our heads in the aurora. So it is magnetically based. Electromagnetism is driving the show. You're going to be distracted the whole way. I do appreciate you joining me today. You can do your own research. I hope you can use those slides to find your own way through this chaos, because we're all in it together. And I'll see you next week. Bye for now.